Ladies and gents, it's time for another podcast. Welcome back to Smack, and this is a special one because it's the first ever Smack Live event. We were in Lausanne at EHL and had an audience of students listening to Patrick Mendes, the CEO of the Premium Midscale and Economy Division for Accor's Europe and North Africa region. And Patrick and I spoke about his career and his journey to becoming the CEO, what Accor has in store for 2024, and how he sees the industry progressing in the next couple of months. Enjoy the show.
All right, ladies and gents, grab a seat, grab a cold domestic beverage. Grab two. Sir, that looks like an impressive cocktail. Good for you. Well done. Cheers. Yeah, no, absolutely. Cheers. All right. For the important part of the evening, the concept of Smack has and always been and will always be that you can't do it by yourself. You need somebody that matches the vibe and can bring some fun and some energy to the stage. So we dug deep in the basket and saw who might be up for the challenge. And we found somebody who had a sort of free Monday night here in Lausanne. Can you please give a massive round of applause for Mr. Patrick Mendes? Do you realize, Patrick, they gave us water? Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think so. Would you a glass of red wine?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's start.
Can we have a glass of red wine and a glass of white wine, Jose? You are the man. Thank you so much.
What red wine is it?
Sorry. I don't know. What red wine is it, Jose?
Perfect.
You could have said anything. Bravo, Jose. One round of applause for Jose.
Cabernet Sauvignon, yeah.
Bravo. Bravo. This was not planned at all. Patrick, thank you for doing this. The first Smack Live ever. We've never done a live podcast recording on this. You've just walked around the campus. You did a campus tour. It's your first time here, I was told. Thoughts?
Well, I'm amazed. First, I'm surprised to see this kind of bar. It's a pleasure to be here, really a pleasure to be here. And I shouldn't say that. It looks like an old guy, but I used to be not in this school, but like you, in a hotel management school.
5 years ago?
A few years ago. Three, five years ago.
Three, five years ago. Yeah.
So it reminded me a lot of souvenirs. So I had the pleasure to have two wonderful guides guiding us through the whole campus. Amazing campus. So really, really amazed.
What kind of a student was Patrick Mendes?
That was not planned at all, man.
No, that was not planned at all. No. What did you study? Hotel? Was it always planned for you to do?
Yeah. Well, just to start from the beginning, I was 15 years old. I wanted to be an architect. Yeah. An architect. So design, architecture. And my father was visiting. I was visiting with my father many buildings, museum, city hall, big constructions, and hotels. And one day visiting hotels, looking at the design, the facade, my father was showing me all the technical aspect. He's a builder. And I've seen those guys with those, those ties and those bows and looking at clients. And I say, wow, that can be another kind of experience. This is when it started. Yeah. And for the one that don't know, you might look in the internet. Look at a series. It's an old series called Hotels. It's a series that it was in the 90s. Hotel was a series. American series. It was before the office and all these new offices that you or new series you're looking at. The beginning of the series, and Hotel was a story of a general manager in a 5-star properties with everything that can happen in a hotel. So all the story. So it's funny to look at that because you can look at the way we used to look at hospitality 30 years ago. I would say 30 years ago.
Basically,
even a bit more than that.
The Game of Thrones of the 90s, basically.
Yes. The Game of Thrones.
Yeah, okay, good.
And this is the way I started. So I started with a hotel interest and I applied for an hotel school in Bordeaux. And I'm French, Portuguese. So I did the École Hôtelière de Bordeaux. So at the time, it was one of the good ones. I did 3 years and plus two, so 5 years in total. So kitchen, bar, restaurant, did everything, all the application, the one-star Michelin also. So doing everything for 5 years, I started to work in hospitality and I said, no, it's not for me. It's too much work, no cash.
Yeah.
So I can't stay on this. So I'm sure some of you are looking at the same thing. I can't work in operation. It's good to be in operation, but I was not willing to stay there. So I went back to school and I did an MBA in marketing.
Yeah.
And after I did INSEAD, the end on an executive MBA. And I started in other things for almost 15 years. I escaped from hospitality. And I came back in hospitality 20 years ago with Accor.
Yeah. Impressive. If we talk, let's get the business, before we talk about the fun stuff, let's talk business first and then we move to the fun.
Cheers, Patrick, first. Cheers.
Santé. Wait, merci. Cheers.
Cheers.
Santé, guys.
Cheers.
This is the real deal. Huh?
Oh, nice.
It's not bad. José, bravo.
Merci.
José, bravo. Thank you. Patrick, Accor, more than 5,400 hotels, 100 countries, 40 brands, some full year results last week that threw it out the park. Would you say Accor is as powerful as it's ever been? Is that, would you agree with that statement? Now pandemic comes to a close, we can finally stop talking about rebound. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I don't know if you had the chance to look at the result last week, where we had many groups, Hilton, Intercontinental, Marriott, Wyndham, and Accor. We announced all our official results. And, well, that was amazing for all of us. But Accor, yes, did announce some amazing results. As I was telling you, it will be my 20th anniversary this year at Accor. I did many, many different jobs. And
at 38 years of age, crazy, how you did it.
38. I'm a bit older than that, but no. But really, 20 years at Accor, I've seen many, many stories, and we will discuss about the stories and about this change of organization and about the way hospitality business is evolving and the way we are looking at this evolution. But I can tell you, last year was amazing. We crossed a line, the billion euro EBITDA line. We never did it before. So it was a record year for Accor. So we did 5 billion revenue, 1 billion EBITDA, 23% growth in RevPAR. So amazing results. And not only in financial results, also in quality, in development. We opened roughly 300 properties. So it's almost one every working day. Not in hospitality because we work every day, but one every working day as a normal staff. So it was amazing results. And the share went up roughly 10% last week, 650 on one day, yeah, and 10% on the whole week. So great momentum for the group in February.
Yeah, you just said it. You've been with the group 20 years. You've seen some recent ups. There's been some not so fun moments along the way. Pandemic, business was difficult, and so on and so forth. You just did something recently at Accor, which also brought you into the position that you are now in with ENA, PME, Europe, North Africa, and the premium mid-scale economy division. Would you mind explaining to the students here tonight just a little bit about that split of division? Because it's fairly unique the way you did it. It's not new that there's different segments that's been around for ages, right? But the way you did it, that there's two divisions now with two different leaders as well, and one division, which is premium mid-scale economy, you've split by regions, whereas the other one, the luxury and lifestyle, you've split by brands, and they have brand CEOs. Can you explain?
You did it.
No, but okay, but I have no explanation for it. I mean, I'm just,
But it's true. It's a big move. Of course, like all the big groups, and I'm talking about the big, let's say the big five, that you all know, the big hospitality groups, we are doing many movement in our organization depending on what's happening in the history. But I can tell you in 2 minutes what happened. First, in the last 10 years, under the leadership of Sébastien Bazin, that you probably met because he was here last year, we acquire more than 40 brands in 10 years. So we moved from 13 to 14 brands 10 years ago to 54 brands today. So that's a major move. So we did acquisitions, Fairmont, Raffles, Swiss Hotel, Mama Shelter, Hoxton, Delano, SLS, Mövenpick, Swiss Hotel. Well, I can go on, 40 brands. I won't describe all of them. In all the segments, from super eco to super luxury to lifestyle. So this is the first big move that we did in the last 10 years. The second move was last year. When you have 54 brands, you can't manage all the brands the same way. I used to be the group CCO, so the chief commercial officer, until last year, in charge of marketing, sales, distribution, and digital for the group. And I can tell you, I had to manage from Raffles to Hotel F1 or to Ibis Budget. It's a lot of different brands. So we decided to split. And this is a one-minute pitch. The split is very simple. Accor is today 5,500 properties. 500 are luxury properties. We call them luxury and lifestyle. And 5,000 are the premium, mid-scale, and eco. On the 500 luxury lifestyle, we organize by brand, as you were just saying. Sofitel and M Gallery, Raffles, Fairmont, and all the Ennismore properties. Ennismore is all the lifestyle division. We have more than 15 brands in lifestyle. So some I've just listed. Hoxton, Mama Shelter, Delano, 25 Hours. These are some brands. So these brands are organized globally. So one CEO for the 120 Sofitel and 120 M Gallery, one CEO for the Fairmont, etc., etc. You got it. It's 25% of the whole group. The other 75%, which represent the premium mid-scale eco, which is Swissôtel, Mövenpick, Pullman, Mercure, Novotel, Adagio, Ibis, Ibis Budget, Hotel F1, Grit, Tribe, which is our new brand, Handwritten, another new brand. So all these brands, which represent 75% of the business, are split in three big regions. One is Americas, with 500 properties. One is Europe, North Africa, which I have the pleasure to lead, which is 3,000 properties. So it's a big one. And the other one is Middle East, Asia Pacific, with a HQ base in Dubai, with roughly 800 properties. So, and this is multi-brand geographical organization. So this is the way we organize ourselves. And for a year now, we've put in place this organization. I don't know if I can say that, but it's a killer. We could see that on the result because the teams are focused on as a luxury lifestyle, as a premium mid-scale and eco.
Would you say that maybe sometimes the effect and the you know, especially the effect of maybe mid-scale and eco is underrated in hospitality and also perhaps in the public eye? Because the reality is that, you know, the probably some of the cash cows, if you want to call it that, whatever we want to name them, some of the more profitable brands, if we look at it, are more likely to be in the mid-scale, potentially premium mid-scale and economy sector, as opposed to luxury lifestyle. Would you say it's underrated, or does it sometimes maybe not get enough credit for how much it contributes? And we just need to look at last week at the full year results, which clearly show that.
Yeah, it's a good one. You know, if I ask to all of you here, I don't know, we have 800 people, who would like to work for premium mid-scale eco versus who would like the luxury lifestyle? I know the answer. Most of you will work for luxury lifestyle. I'm coming from luxury. I used to work for Lucien Barrière. I used to work for Intercontinental on the luxury side. I'm more coming from luxury. And when Sebastian called me and said, well, we have different positions, myself and my counterpart, which is a great guy that you might invite one day here, Duncan O'Rourke, is the CEO for Middle East Asia Pacific. We both decided, both coming from luxury, we both decided to go on the premium mid-scale and eco. So yes, the short answer, it is underrated. I can tell you, since I'm in charge, it's funny to see all the Ibis team, the Mercure team, the Pullman team, the energy they have, the freedom they have, the innovation they can put in the brands. I'm amazed. So it's, yes, underrated, and it's also underrated in terms of financial performance. Mm. Because when you have a COVID crisis, when you have a good momentum or a bad momentum, you have flexibility in terms of revenue management, in terms of branding, in terms of standards. So it's a segment interesting to work with.
Yeah. 20 years at Accor, you must have one or two stories where you think back and you think, what the F happened? There must be. Can you share one story, one moment, one something that has particularly stayed with you from 20 years at Accor? Go back even further for like here, from in hospitality, something that really stuck with you, an experience you remember, somebody you met along the way. Any peachy story for the gang here? We're amongst ourselves. There's nobody here.
I have many, of course, but I will tell you. I did three periods at Accor. My first one was 7 years in charge of what we call international sales. So I was based on the HQ in Paris, and I was heading all the international accounts, corporate accounts, business travel, very interesting, traveling a lot, managing all the sales executives, and starting with Booking, Expedia, GDS, all this stuff that you have to know. And if you don't know, you need to know that, because it's fundamental. Even if you were to work in real estate tomorrow, or in profitability, on hospitality, you need to understand what is revenue management, sales, distribution, etc. So I started like that. And after I moved 10 years in Latin America, I was based in São Paulo for 9 years as a CEO at the beginning, and as a CEO after 3-4 years. And after I moved back to Paris 3 years ago, as I was telling you, as a global CCO. So I have a lot of story in Latin America. So I don't know if you have... Do we have some Latin American here? Colombia?
Bravo.
Where are you from? São Paulo. Brasileira? Ah, parabéns. Eu sou meio brasileiro, por isso que... Where are you from?
All right, that was the English part, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good evening. See you all next time. Thank you.
Now, so where are you from? São Paulo. So Rio, okay. Any other Latin America? Colombia, Cartagena, Cali. Perfect. Very nice city also. Well, so of course I have lots of stories. I want to be careful.
That's there's people here. Careful.
But, when you work in Latin America, it's of course so different from what you're doing in Europe. So one of the stories I can tell you was development. We were trying to develop some good portfolio. And when you are there, you have a lot of discrepancy between the rich and the poor. And I was with this guy, wanted to develop some hotels in the Mato Grosso. And so in the center of the States, or in the center of Brazil. And he came with, very like a countryman, a very normal guy.
Yeah.
And I told him, so what do you want to do? So he wanted to do 10 hotels. And I said, but we can visit the land. So, okay, so we're going to visit the land. Mm. And in fact, we took a plane. We started to visit the land, and we took about, 2 hours flying the land just to look at where could we put some hotels, some IBCs, and some Mercure. So this is the kind of story that I think it's interesting. When you're working on development, on new real estate development, you can find in some of these countries which are not as developed as we have in Europe. And I'm talking about Africa. I'm talking about, Middle East now growing very fast, and the South America. That's one of the best story I have. So to see the people trying to develop what they see when they visit in Europe. Europe is becoming a reference for many, many travelers. They want to do the same that they've seen in Paris or in Lausanne or in London in their country. That's very interesting for me.
Probably a little bit more difficult to do this in London. Hop on a plane, fly around London, and see where you have it. Patrick, while we're on the topic, let's talk a little bit about development, because I'm sure there's some people here that are looking to go into development potentially. And I wanted to get your take, and we'll stick to your region, which is, as we've said now, Europe, North Africa. And we maybe need to clear up what exactly that entitles, because it's a little bit bigger than just continental Europe, the way that you guys do it at Accor. Where do you kind of see, in terms of development, where do you see some areas in your region that you want to particularly focus on? Is there any areas that you want to particularly focus on? Is there areas in Europe where you guys at Accor, again, relative to PME, have seen some great potentials in terms of development? Give me your thoughts on where we are. And I promise we're coming to the juicy bits. We're finishing business, and then we come to the juicy part. Go ahead.
Yes, what we call Europe, North Africa, at Accor is the 48 countries. So we're going from Russia to Malta, to, of course, UK, Portugal, so to have the whole big Europe, plus North Africa, which is Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Israel, which is also part of Europe, North Africa. We put those countries linked to Europe because they are mainly sourced by Europe. That's why we merge Europe and North Africa. So in total, as I told you, is 3,000 properties, 48 countries, roughly 130,000 employees. We call them artists, and very developed in the Western world. So talking about, of course, France, UK, Germany, Poland, Belgium, Switzerland, where we are very developed. And PME represent 98% of the total, because we have roughly 3,000 properties and about 100, which are luxury lifestyle property. So this is the Retro Today, where we are developing. Well, this year we open about 90 hotels. We will open 120 in 2024, so it's one hotel every 4 days, every 3 days, so it's two hotels per week. We're opening mainly in eastern regions. Mm-hmm. What I call eastern regions is from Romania, Bulgaria, going up to Uzbekistan, Georgia. These countries are amazing because they are a bit what I was explaining about Brazil or about Latin America earlier. We have a lot of space where hospitality is just starting in mm-hmm. those countries. So all the Eastern Europe is a big development. We also have a big development in South Europe, so Spain, Portugal, Italy. It's still a market very independent driven. You don't have a lot of chain. If you take Italy, almost 90% of the hotels are independent hotels, the mom and pop hotels. So when you're bringing a Sofitel or a Fairmont or a Mama Shelter or a Pullman or a Novotel, you're bringing a loyalty program, you're bringing a distribution platform. So you're bringing something that can add value. So this is where we are developing, either through conversion or through a new build in the East region, knowing that new build in the Western world is quite complex
yeah.
due to the rate, the interest rate, and the development is slowed down in terms of new build in the Western world.
Yeah. Patrick, I'm going to share a personal story here because you know, you and I have the pleasure to work together from time to time on videos and stuff like this. And I remember once that you told me a story, and I would like you to repeat it if that's okay for the students tonight, that you did a trip not too long ago. I think it was maybe the second part of last year to Eastern Europe. I think you visited Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan?
Uzbekistan, and Georgia.
And I remember that I spoke to a colleague of yours, Anne, who is watching very closely what we do here tonight, that we don't do anything stupid. And she came back to me and said that you were particularly impressed with what you saw in that trip. Not, yes, because of the development possibilities, but also because of the way you experienced it there. I think it was your first time in the country as well. Can you walk me through what it is as a CEO, French publicly listed company, you come into a country like that, which is, you know, let's be honest, not as developed as some of the Western European countries. What do you experience there? You come off the plane and, you know, you don't see a flashy London Heathrow or a, you know, a fancy Charles de Gaulle or, you know, not so fancy BER Berlin airport. You know, what is that like for you to visit places that are, you know, probably 90% of the people in Europe have never even been to, nor would they be able to point it out on a map?
Yeah, it's always the case when you go in new countries or in new development. All of us, all the operators, all the funds, we are all working in the same countries. So Switzerland, Germany, UK, France, etc. Some of us are daring to go a bit further, but it's a big decision because you need to bring support, you need to bring languages, websites, capabilities to support the hotels. So when you decide to go to Uzbekistan or to Georgia or to, I'm going to Albania in 2 weeks' time.
How's your Albanian?
Sorry?
How's your Albanian?
I'm still training.
So. Okay.
But, you know, I don't know these countries, I can tell you. I don't know if we have some people. But these countries are amazingly growing. But it's amazing. Eh? When I was going back to your story, I don't know if you know, but Tashkent, Samarkand, Bukhara are great city from the Silk Road. Very, very nice cities. The construction, the tourism is amazing. Still at the beginning, if you go to Kazakhstan, it's the same thing. You go to Almaty or to Astana, those cities. We don't know those cities, but you can go there. First, you're received like a prime minister. Or like a president, because of course they're not used to see a CEO of a group coming there. So the first thing is the welcoming, but not only because you are CEO, even for non-CEO, they have this in the blood. Secondly, they want to develop tourism. So I recommend you, all of you students, don't go to the easy piece. Try to discover those new cities because you will be different. If you know those places, if you're visiting those places, even working on those places, you'll be surprised by the welcoming, by the quality, and by the energy you can see on this city. So it's the second thing. So energy and welcoming is amazing. And the third thing is diversity in terms of culture. you're learning. You're not on the mainframe learning the same thing as the others. You're learning. I've learned many, many things about culture, about history, about geography that I didn't know. So that was, for me, one of the best trip I did for many years to discover really the Caucasus and the east part of East Europe.
Yeah, yeah. We have to talk about the elephant in the room, Patrick. Any football fans here tonight? Any sports? No football fan. Jesus Christ. Okay, never mind. Slowly but sure. Ladies, good for you. Well done. Good. Patrick, I know, and I was, you know, I was fortunate enough to ask some of your staff on some background stories, and I've been told you're a big PSG fan, and we all know that obviously PSG. And I want to talk to you about the PSG topic from a slightly different angle. We can discuss about taste, and you know, personally, I think Bayern Munich is much cooler. But that, you know, I'll leave you with that. But let's talk about the PSG.
Take some more wine.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, on that one, for sure. Yeah. But I want to talk to you about the PSG angle because, you know, I want to talk to you about the whole loyalty program and all topic. And I think it's safe to say that PSG has helped elevate the all program to what it is. Sébastien Bazin was on this podcast about a year and a half ago, and he talked about Le Club, which was the previous one, and he said it was just not it. It was the wrong appellation. There was two membership possibilities, and you've really tried to go a step forward now with all, and last year showed that with some experiences that you did also within your region. Can you talk to me, and especially in this crowd, I wanted to bring this question to you. Can you talk to me a little bit about loyalty and how you think loyalty might develop in the future? Because there's, from my experience, there's two sides here. Some say the loyalty programs will be all the more important in the future, and some say these guys and girls in this room, and when they have, you know, completed their studies and are out in the workforce, they're not going to give a damn about loyalty anymore. They're going to choose the best location, the best price, and whether that's a Courtyard, a Moxie, or an Ibis, or a Novotel, who cares? How do you see that developing? It might be a very, you know, philosophical question, but how do you see that developing? And how happy are you with where all is right now and how it's developed, even though it's PSG? But, you know,
Well, it's a big question. Eh? It can be a long answer, so I'm trying to structure my answer.
Oh, we have time. They have class tomorrow at 8, so we have about 12 hours, so you can...
No, it's a big topic. First, we came late. And
to the party.
Sebastian told you that. We came late versus the Hilton, the Marriott, and all the our friends from other companies. We came late, and we tried to came very strong. So, yes, we had Le Club, we had a compliment. In fact, we started loyalty in Brazil, because Brazil is very advanced in terms of loyalty. Only in B2C, on retail, you have loyalty program everywhere, which it's not the case in Europe. So we decided to launch a brand new program 3 years ago, just before the COVID. Can you imagine?
Good timing. Yeah,
2020. And when my first answer to your question is brand awareness. When you decided to launch a new brand, and the brand is all, Accor Live Limitless, I'm sure you heard about this name, from scratch, very difficult to define what is the best option to start. And we did something very simple. We went on social media. 80 to 85% of the content in social media is three things: travel, gastronomy, sport. If you talk some of the three, you have 85% of the content. We had already travel by our identity. We had a gastronomy also with Bayern. So we still have sport. In sport, it's a no-brainer. Football, but it's far, far from the others. You can sum rugby, basket, and all that together. You don't achieve the level of sport in terms of fan-based. If you take just a Ronaldo or the Neymar or the Messi of the world.
Ronaldo or Messi?
Mbappé.
Huh? Ronaldo or Messi?
Ronaldo, of course.
Ronaldo, of course.
Cristiano. I'm half Portuguese.
Okay, yes. That helps the answer. Yeah, okay.
Fine. I'm half Portuguese, half French. But so sport was clearly, football was the number one. And in football, you have 10 clubs in the world that are above the range of 50 million euro investment in terms of marketing sponsoring. It's big, eh? 50 million per year. So you spend above 50 million per year to put the name. So when you do that, it's a big check. So we decided to go with PSG, which was one of the 10. The 10 are Manchester United, Chelsea, all the Bayern, the Munich, and all these guys. I don't forget. My
Thank you for mentioning. Yeah. Honorable mention. Yeah.
So this is the way. And well, for us, it was a really, really good move because in 18 months, we achieved the same brand awareness or brand love index with all in 18 months versus 8-9 years with Le Club. So you really move the needle when you invest in marketing and in communication. So that was the first part of answer of my question. If you want to do a loyalty program and you want to be, you need to invest cash. And when you're saying 50 per year plus 3 years, so it's more than 150 million investment that you're doing to position yourself as a brand. So now, what is the result now? We have roughly 35% of our guests that are coming with a loyalty card.
Through the card, yeah.
So in, let's say, 3-4 years, 35% of our guests coming with a loyalty card. So it's huge. It's huge, but it's not enough. Some of our competitors are above 50% already because they are here for 20 years. So I'm a strong believer that loyalty helps to bring volume, to bring good volume, and to bring repetitiveness or
repetitiveness.
Yep. Repetitiveness in the business. Mm-hmm. And so that's the second part of the question. It works. It works. It brings business. The third part is how do you make sure that those clients are coming back to you and not and keeping loyalty? And here we learned a few things. But the main thing we learned is the more you offer to the same guest, the better it is for him. So you mean, because we have 54 brands and all our brands, you can burn and earn points. In all our brands, you can have a loyalty price which is cheaper than distribution
elsewhere.
So you break parity, which is quite heavy. In all our brands, you can have something additional if you book through all.com or through all, than in book. So this is something, if you want to go the full scope, if you want to go the full way on loyalty, you need to go this way. So awareness, after investment in marketing, and third, being quite tough in revenue management, distribution platform, and increasing the number of opportunities you can give to your guest.
Yeah. You just talked about something I wanted to pick up. You said already yourself, Patrick, you've been in the business 20 years. You're clearly in the C-level suite these days, and you've seen your fair share of people come and go in the business. And I wanted to ask a question because, you know, I'm sure for people who are just starting this, it's quite interesting to know. Between you and I, and again, we're amongst ourselves tonight, so how difficult sometimes is it to stay human in the C-level suite? Because I imagine you have to take some tough decisions here and there, and you know, changes need to be made, whether that's people, whether that's business, whether that's directive, doesn't matter. There must be some tough decisions along the way. You travel a shit ton around Europe. Yes, you get to see some nice places. You get to see the world, and that's true. But how difficult is it to, you know, to stay Patrick Mendes, to go, I know you're a big fan of, and we'll talk about them in a second, the bikes, whether that's the real bike or the motorbike and you know, football, passion, family, whatever it may be. Is it difficult sometimes?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Good night.
Simple answer. It's difficult. It's a question of hygiene.
Yeah.
And a question of decision-making process. I've been in your position 35 years ago. Well, I'm going to kill the elephant. I'm 55. So at least you know, I'm 55 years old. I have three kids, 26, 24, 21. I'm married with the same woman for 30 years this year. So that's why.
Is that a round of applause? Is that worth it? There we go. Right there.
So at least you know a little bit more about me and personally. But you don't do that and become a C-level or whatever you want to become without life balance. So life balance is key. And I've seen many young, 21, 25 years old, coming to the office and trying to say, for the next 10 years, I'm going to put everything on my job. I'm going to be the best. I want to grow. I want to be managing a VP or whatever. I want to put everything. Wrong answer. Don't do that. I tell you, I've never did that. And I think I was right. And I'm even more convinced that I was right when I'm looking at some people doing that and starting with a burnout at 30 years old or couldn't find their partner at 35 or 40 years old or being too tall, too small, too whatever because they can't do sport, they can't do what they want or they don't escape from their day-to-day life. So life balance is key. And if to go back to your question, if you want to be a human, you need to be very balanced, because I can be stressed. I can have a lot of things to organize. I have my budget to present yesterday, or I have a big meeting. I have a big speaking session with
the biggest of the year so far. I don't know for sure.
You have a lot of reason to be stressed.
Yeah,
but the more you are balanced in everything I was saying, it's don't put everything on the same side or on the same basket. Don't put everything on your career. Don't put everything on your family. Don't put everything on your friends. Just be balanced. And it's one of the most difficult things to achieve when you are a young student and you're finishing a school. I'm not saying you don't need to do some push sometime. Huh? You need to invest 2 or 3 years, perhaps sometime in a job. But be very careful. It's very difficult not to come back. So I did that all my life. Mm. And I'm trying to maintain this balance even now after 30 years of career. And I've been working in 8 different countries. Of course, also that's important. So
yeah. If you had to choose, now that we're on the topic, if you had to choose football, rugby, or biking?
Biking first.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of two bikes. Huh?
Okay.
The motorbikes and the bikes. So I have a big fan, and it's still racing quite regularly. Rugby. I've played roughly 20 years of rugby.
Yeah.
I'm from the southwest of France. So
yeah.
So you need
What's
to play rugby.
What's your team? What's your rugby?
I was in Dax. Dax is small, you know, but Bordeaux Bègles or Bordeaux or Dax used to be my team. And after football.
Yeah.
But I love sport in general. And that's why I'm very happy we have the Olympics. So, of course, I don't know if you have a question about the Olympics.
Here we go. I was going to go there next because of when we're on sports. Let's give a quick outlook on 2024. And I'm sure somebody's already fed up with us that we're speaking way too long. But, you know, let's talk about 2024. Big things coming up, development, we've talked about a little bit already. And then obviously there is the Paris Olympics and also the Paralympics coming up. Accor playing a big role. It's in your region, obviously, as well. Can you give me a couple of sentences of what to expect? We've seen some news already, obviously, the opening ceremony along the Seine, something that's never been done the way that Paris is going to try to do it. What does that mean let's do two things, for the city of Paris and for France as a destination, but also for Accor in terms of, again, presenting yourself to a world, potentially to an audience that maybe hasn't heard of Accor, that's maybe coming to France for the first time, that you can then, again, through loyalty, capture in their own markets?
Yeah, I'm lucky. I was in Latin America, in Brazil, when we had the Olympic Games in Rio and when we had the World Cup in Brazil. So I had the chance to do twice.
That went quite well for the Germans, just to
In the game, the 7-1.
Were you there?
I was there, yeah. I was there.
Oh, my goodness.
With Sébastien Bazin, we were crying with a Brazilian. 7-1.
I had a good night.
Not just because I was in Brazil, but...
yeah, good.
For the 7-1 in the semifinal.
Do you know that they thought in Germany they thought about making that a national public holiday because they loved it so much. Anyways, sorry.
It is mean, huh? I'm defending.
Oh, I forgot about you guys. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's German, as you can see. Yeah.
Yeah. In case you didn't realize. Yeah. Sorry.
But so I had a chance to do that, and we organized in Brazil at that time a team. That I transfer partly in France. So we have two major events in Europe this year. First, in Germany, the UEFA, the European Cup.
Prediction? Prediction?
Well, of course, France, of course.
France?
Of course.
T'es sérieux?
No doubt.
Oh la la. Okay.
I can beat.
We can put it on the record. Yeah, yeah.
So this is a big one also for Germany. And the Olympics. And the Olympics, it's a big, big, big event. It's going to be the first big event after COVID, because I don't remember you that Japan had the last one, but they were very unlucky organizing all these Olympic Games during the COVID. So it's going to be the first massive event, 3 billion telespectators. We're expecting 16 to 20 million travelers traveling to Paris. Between July and August. It's going to be massive. And it's going to be massive for all Europe because they're going to go to Switzerland, to Italy. A lot of people are coming from Australia, from Brazil, from North America, and they're staying a month or 3 weeks to participate. So this is going to be a vitrine for Europe. It's going to be massive also for Paris, because I don't know if you like Paris, I don't know if you don't like Paris, but you have some images when you talk about Paris. Some are good, some are not as good. So we need to, let's say, to make it shine a little bit more. And you will have the possibility to visit Paris clean, safe, organized, which is all the time.
Organized? I take your word for it.
Clean, safe, organized all the time. That would have been wonderful. I can see all the monuments are being reshuffled. Everything is being prepared. It's going to be amazing. It will be a massive event. And don't forget, France is the number one country in terms of tourism. I don't know if you have the figures, but number one is France, achieving 93 million and planning to achieve more than 100 million tourists next year, so in 2024. Do you know what is the second country in the world in terms of tourism?
Take a guess. Shout. Throw it at us.
Spain.
Switzerland.
Spain. 83 million. The third one? No. No. US. Of course, you. And the fourth is Italy. So France, Spain, US, Italy are the biggest above the 75 to 80 million tourism. And we're almost back on the volume pre-COVID. Not totally, but almost back, because in France we were at 100 million in 2019. So we went back, of course, we went down, but we're back now. So it's going to be a massive event and a good way for Paris and France to shine. And the last thing, Accor, of course. We are an official partner. We are the only player, only hospitality player, premium sponsor, which means that we will be very visible. But we will also manage the villages, the Haslett village and the Media village. We're talking about 15,000 rooms being built on purpose. They're going to be resold after to some, you can buy an apartment with two bedrooms after the Olympics. Some are already sold. But we will operate those hotels for 6 months. Starting on the 1st of April, we started to operate. So I'm recruiting 1,000 people to be part of the Olympic, to operate check-in, check-out, breakfast, giving some information to all the athletes and the media. So it's a big, big operation for us.
Yeah. If we, and just like that, Patrick, 45 minutes have passed, and I'm sure, again, somebody's probably upset with us that we're running over, but that's okay.
Are we late?
Are we late already? As usual.
As usual. So okay. I'm friendly.
That's fine. Patrick, tell me a little bit more, and as we try and come slowly to the end here, tell me a little bit more about this idea of hosting an event like this, because I imagine the efforts that your team has to take, and it's not just the recruiting. The recruiting is obviously a massive part of it, because you need people to do the jobs, obviously. But there's more. There's promotion and everything that comes with it. There's organization behind the scenes and so on and so forth. Can you explain to me a little bit what the aftermath for Accor, or what you're hoping to achieve for the aftermath for Accor? Yes, there's a business side during the event, but I imagine you're hoping for an effect after the event as well.
Well, it's a big investment. And when you are investing in sponsoring, right, in general, I don't know if you're familiar with sponsoring, but Accor is a big sponsor of major sport events and many events in general. We are sponsoring Roland Garros. We sponsor the Festival Montreux. You can see here, we have the Accor Arena.
Yeah.
We have the Accor Stadium in Australia. We are, of course, the Olympics now and the PSG. So these are some of the assets, but we've seen that investing in marketing need to be a mix between display or marketing display, the marketing you know, search and SEO and SEM, so everything linked to Google marketing, and sponsoring. So we invest in quite a lot in sponsoring. When you do invest in sponsoring, it's a massive massive organization. So to be very specific on the Olympics, I have a big team. We have a leader, a project only for this team, and I have some team dedicated only for the Olympics. We need to operate hotels, as I was telling you. We operate the 14,000 rooms.
Yeah.
We need to operate the promotion. We are on the Club France. Club France is a kind of space like that, three times bigger, where you have all the lounge and all the athlete and all the VIP coming there. We have all the F&B outlets, all the security aspect, the safety aspect of the food. All the promotion in hotels. We have 360 hotels in Paris and more than 2,000 hotels in France where we are actively promoting being a sponsor. ACO is a sponsor of the Olympic Games. So just to give you some notes, but you in marketing, in sales, in F&B, in operation, in development, but it's not only for the event. When you're investing in such a big event and big amounts, I won't disclose the amount here, but it's a big amount, can tell you.
2,000 euros, something.
Yeah, a bit bigger than that. It's a big amount. Well, you have the official figures of LVMH, sure. which announced 120, 130 million investment for the Olympics. So we are not in this range, but it gives you a sense of the value we're talking about. You're investing for many years. What we expect from this kind of events is 3-5 years of benefits.
Okay.
People will look at Paris differently. People will look at French differently. Mm. They're nice people. They are welcoming you. They are not grimpy.
Organized.
They're organized. Yeah. So this is an we're expecting whole Europe benefiting from Paris.
Yeah.
Because when you're Chinese, you're Indonesian, or you're South African, or you're Brazilian, when you're coming to Europe, you go to Rome, you go to London, you go to Paris, you go. But this is a kind of attraction for all Europe. So as a CEO for Europe North Africa, I see a lot of benefit of having these Olympics here.
Yeah. Before we go, Patrick, I wanted to, we obviously do some research here for SMAC, and we speak to some people around you. And
already seeing what you're doing.
No, it's not too bad. And we two things I want to touch on. I'll start with the easier of the two topics. If we speak to people that have worked for you over time, and don't forget, guys, to hand in your questions, by the way, you've got the QR codes if there's anything you want to ask Patrick at the end. Now is the time. A couple of topics that always come up when you ask people about you is that you genuinely care about certain topics and you feel very strongly about them. Diversity and inclusion being one of them, where you've pushed very hard and you've made it very clear of how you want that to proceed in Europe and so on and so forth. And it's obviously, it's become, sometimes I feel it's become even a little bit of a trend to say we care about diversity and inclusion, but you've really gone out of your way to try and, show some actions with that. Can you talk to me a little bit about why you feel so strongly about it? And, from the people that I've spoken to, it seems like it's more for you than just a marketing idea. There seems to be some real thought process of why it's important and can fit in certain elements and can bring elements to the team that might otherwise not be there.
Well, you can't be fake when you're talking about diversity or even ESG or inclusion. You can't be fake. And I've seen so many fake people. You need to write it on the slide because it's à la mode. Huh? It's you need to put it. But I'm a really...
You hate that, huh?
I hate that. Yeah. I hate that. Saying the word because you need to say it but you don't mean or you don't know what you're talking about. I had the privilege to live in many countries. And I've seen no inclusion, no diversity very deeply in many countries. And as an example, I'm picking again about Brazil, sorry about Brazilian. But I was CEO at the time of Bolsonaro. I don't want to enter in politics here, but I'm just telling you, Bolsonaro was known as someone complex on diversity. And I, as a CEO, I was very visible because ACO is one of the first private company in Brazil. I had to say publicly that I was pro-diversity. I was an ambassador of the LGBT plus community. So I was trying to defend some very difficult lack of actions, concrete action, or even sometimes they were against the LGBT community. So you need to leave it. You need to show. So I was really deeply involved personally, playing with them, participating to some forum, showcasing what a CEO has to do, recruiting some people that had a lot of difficulties. So you need to walk the talk, otherwise it's too easy. So so diversity for me, and I'm talking here about LGBT community, but the first question I asked to Eva earlier that did a good visit was, how did you give access to disabled people here in this forum or in this school? Do you have wheelchair facilities? This is another topic in diversity. You need to walk the talk. You need to be able to receive guests, really. So, no, it's deep on me. I have a lot of friends with some difficulty from some disability.
Yep.
One of my best friend, one of my good friend is Michael Jeremias, is one of our ambassadors. He's a guy that had a, just spending 1 minute on this one, is he had an accident. He was 18 or 20 or 19 years old, ski accident. He became a paraplegic.
Yep.
And now he's in 4 years, he's changed sport, became a tennis player, and he became world champion for 4 years and Olympic champion for 4 years in wheelchair tennis. So, and he became now an ambassador of Accor. So we contract him as an ambassador working for us, trying to explain what is being disabled. And I did with him some interesting journey, taking his wheelchair and trying to enter a room, even at Accor, which is supposedly an operator playing the game, and we are doing everything we can do, even though it was very difficult to open a door to really make it real for disabled people. So the short answer, I'm very concerned about this topic, and you should all be concerned. But when you mean you're concerned, when you want to embrace, you need to be really genuine. You need to go deep. You need to understand. You need to talk to them. You need to practice what they are living on the day to day.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I can only confirm, and I used to play tennis quite a bit, and I had the chance to try wheelchair tennis because I, you know, had no idea about what that meant and so on and so forth. I can only recommend trying out Paralympic sports if you want to really challenge yourself. That is some of the most difficult thing that I have ever tried. It is extremely difficult. There's so much coordination going on, so I can only agree. I can't let you go without asking. I was told to ask about the tiger. The tiger, it's a motorbike story.
Ah, my tiger.
You're a tiger. Tell me about the tiger.
I was scared about the tiger. My motorbike. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of motorbikes. So, in fact, I have a tiger and I have a BMW. So you'll be happy. So it's
good. Yeah. Bravo.
But I have a
world champion. World champion. Yes, 7-1. Anyways, yeah.
No, I'm a big fan of motorbike. Not for the sake of having motorbike, but I have a 1200 Adventure BMW, and I did many trips in Europe, South America, Patagonia, Atacama, Uyuni, with my bike. So that's my escape.
I was going to say, is it a way of escaping sometimes as well, taking the tiger and just
12 days,
it? Yeah.
Three friends, my wife also with me, so three couples. So yeah. And we're going on the worst scenario. We did three times the Paris-Dakar, you know, the Dakar that was in Latin America. 1 day or 2 days before, so going on the car before the Dakar. So it was a way for me to escape. So sport, each one selects his escape route, but for me, sport, bike, motorbike are really the way for me to cut a little bit.
If we asked stress. If we asked your wife, would she say you're a good motorbike driver, or would she say, "Ooh la la, please don't"?
Well, she's following me for 30 years.
So it must be.
Say, yes.
It must be okay.
Well, I'm following her. I don't know.
Patrick, before we go, we have a tradition here on Smack. And again, just like that, an hour has passed. And before you get your well-deserved round of applause, we have a tradition here on the podcast where we ask three questions that are fairly simple with a request for a short answer, but they might not be as simple as you might think. I'll start and I'll give you an example. Your favorite hotel outside of the Accor world? See? Yeah. The German came prepared. Yeah.
I'll say two.
Okay, that's
two
fair.
Two experiences.
That's fair.
One is in South Africa.
Okay.
Which I've tried recently. Amazing hotel in Stellenbosch. I don't know if you know Stellenbosch. Mm-hmm. It's a wine region in the close to the Cap, to the Cape Town. And it's called Babylonia. Amazing property, really. Not luxury. They got it. They got it. It's a very natural. So I loved it. And the second one is, you could feel that I love Latin America. So it was in Peru, in Cusco. I'm just thinking about the Nazarenas, which is a property from Belmont. So that's why it's a great property in Cusco. So if you have a chance one day to travel to Cusco, go for it. It's amazing. So.
Somebody we can all learn from. I see. This is yeah.
Your best friend, I think, because
Very good answer.
I think
wow,
it's
a very good answer.
It's the only one, not your wife, not your, not the, not Steve Jobs of your sensor, or or Mandela, the best friend. Why? Because it's the only one that can tell you what you need to listen. And I'm often calling my best friend to say, "What do you think? Did I screw up? What should I do here?" You know me better than you have total confidence on that. So best friend for me is the one you can learn a lot from.
Yeah. And then the final one, and I'm very curious about this this particular answer, something that Patrick Mendes is proud of.
It's a difficult one.
I'm here for the difficult. Yeah. I mean,
I will say you have two things. Let's link. To have succeeded a career, I'm very proud of my career, honestly. I'm far away what I was expecting when I was this little boy of this 15 years old trying to become an architect, and what I am today, heading a group of 3,000 properties and all the that you know, and having succeeded in doing and building a family at the same time. So life balance for me is, and I come back with what I started with, having three kids, wife, a life balance, and having succeeded in a career that I did, for me it's my best achievement.
Bravo, monsieur.
Bravo.
I have nothing to add. Thank you so much for two things, for coming to Lausanne. I know that you have an incredibly tight schedule. Just so I've said it, what time is your flight tomorrow morning?
6 a.m.
6 a.m. Bravo. So thank you for coming tonight, for making the trip, Patrick. It's been very fun. Thank you so much. That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media, or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.